Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Half Empty Podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We're produced by Michael Schamberger, and we're lucky enough to be joined today by Monday Night Football play-by-play man Sean McDonough. Sean, how's everything going this week?
It's going very well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. So you've got the Bears and the Vikings Monday night. You must have breathed a big sigh of relief when that Adam Schefter tweet hit your timeline that said that Mitch Trubisky is going to be starting for the Bears, which means that you are not going to be calling a legendary Mike Glennon matchup.
Well, I sort of feel bad for Mike Glennon in this because it almost seemed like his situation was doomed to fail before it even started once they drafted Mitchell Trubisky, and obviously Glennon waited a while to get a chance. But selfishly, sure, we're excited. It's a great storyline. I think, you know, the whole Trubisky thing has been fascinating, even leading into the draft. You know, there were varying opinions about him and where he might get picked. And then obviously the Bears made quite a trade to get him and made a statement about what they think about him. And I know the fans have been clamoring to see him, and now we'll get a chance to see him on Monday Night Football.
He looked pretty good in the preseason, but like that's against other teams' second stringers. Would, do you have any idea what to expect out of him on Monday night?
Well, I think there's a lot being asked of him. You know, not only is it his debut with all kinds of attention and anticipation on it, but you know, he's stepping into a pretty difficult situation. You know, I think particularly at the wide receiver position, you know, I don't think their group is very strong. So they're going to try to get the running game going. You know, they did that pretty successfully in the game they won against Pittsburgh, but you know, I think he's going to have to rely heavily on the run. And if they can't get that going, I think he could be in for a long night because, as you know, Ryan, Minnesota is one of the best defensive teams in the league. And you know, they do a lot of things to make life difficult for the opposing quarterbacks, whether he's experienced or not. So it could be, it's a rough way to break in, I think, given some of the handicaps he's dealing with the offense around him and given the opponent that they're playing.
They lost Dalvin Cook for the year with a torn ACL. Their quarterback situation, I don't know that we would have come into the year saying Sam Bradford would be a big loss, but the way that he played in their season opener, I know Case Keenum came in and he had one good game, but how do you think the Vikings offense is going to do?
Well, I think Case Keenum's done a pretty good job. As a matter of fact, he did a much better than good job against Tampa Bay. He had one of the best games of any quarterback in the league this year, but he's not as good as Sam Bradford. I really do feel sorry for Sam. You know, he's been through a lot in his career, particularly injuries, but he's also played on some bad teams. And you know, it was such an uplifting start to the season the way he played and the way they played on Monday Night Football against New Orleans, and then to have him walk away from that game not really even knowing he was injured. It was really only the next day, I guess, that they realized that he had a problem. It's unfortunate for him, and it's unfortunate for the Vikings. I think they've been as devastated by injuries as any team, maybe more so than any other team in the league the last few years. Yeah, I thought the way they played on opening night, if they were able to keep playing offense like that with the defense that they have, you know, they not only had a great chance to be a playoff team, but make some noise in the playoffs. But, you know, as solid as Case Keenum has been backing up, he's not him, and I think it's a tough break for them. Hopefully he can get back in there sooner rather than later.
So this year you've gotten some better games than you guys got last year. Last year in October, there was like one specific moment where it was like a flag festival in the game between the Jets and the Cardinals. And you kind of almost like apologized to viewers for it and said that we're looking for one of the reasons that ratings are down. Like, look at no further than all of these flags. Did you hear any like feedback from your bosses or from the NFL about being that candid about what you were watching that night?
I didn't get any feedback that night. You know, I did talk with Dean Blandino, who at the time was the head of the officials, but it was several weeks later. I had actually called him because I had a question about a rules issue, and you know, I brought it up and just wanted to make sure that he didn't have any problem with what I said, and he didn't, and he assured me that if he did, he would have reached out to me. You know, later in the year, I made a comment about a call, and I used some pretty strong language. I think I said, that's ridiculous or something, and it got back to me that they didn't really like the wording of it. You know, I'm fine with that. You know, I hope that if they have a problem, they would speak up. If I get something wrong, I certainly would want to correct it. On the other hand, too, I hope that they appreciate that, you know, we're working really hard to do the best we can to make the NFL in the best possible light every Monday night. You know, we really are broadcast partners. I don't think any of us are out to damage the league because, you know, ultimately we're damaging something that's important to our network. So I've had a great relationship so far with the NFL, and I hope it continues that way. But, you know, my foremost responsibility is to the viewer, and I think I need to be talking about what the viewer is thinking about as he or she watches the game. And I just thought if I was sitting in my living room that night watching the game, I would have been really annoyed by all the flags. So that's why I said what I said. And, you know, it got portrayed in some places, as I was saying, officiating is the reason why people are turning off the league. And that's not true at all. I think by and large, I can't remember the last time on a Monday game that we made an issue of the officiating at all. It was just that particular night that on occasion when there are 20-plus penalties in a game where it doesn't seem even all that physical and a lot of them seem ticky-tack, people don't want to watch that. But I think that's down on the list of why maybe the ratings took a little dip last year.
What have been like the positive surprises about the Monday Night Football job, and what have been some of the things that are a surprise about the new job that really you don't like as much?
Well, you know, there really haven't been any negatives. I mean, I've been hoping for an opportunity like this for a long time. You know, Monday Night Football is certainly a dream job, and I think just about anybody in our business would want to do it. So, you know, it's been awesome. I mean, positive are it's even better than I thought it was going to be. You know, I don't know the negatives. I think the negatives have just been all of the stuff that we've had to deal with. You know, last year you talk about the ratings dipping. I think the biggest thing was the Trump-Hillary race and, you know, so much attention given to that and the huge bump that the news networks got out of that. You know, in particular, we got crushed the night that we went opposite the first debate when we had the New Orleans Atlanta game. So, you know, and then this year, I mean, we start out, you know, up against Hurricane Irma. And, you know, last week we were up against, you know, the Sunday night was the shooting in Las Vegas. And, you know, you just sit there and say, well, you know, it stinks that it's going to diminish our audience. But I never had that thought for one second because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, relative to the horrific loss of life and the monstrous evil of this person who did it and the pain and suffering of, you know, these 59 people who died and the 500 or so were injured and their families and loved ones and everything else that was absolutely tragic beyond belief, you know, to sit here and feel sorry for ourselves because it might knock the rating down a point or two is, you know, would be selfish beyond belief. And I'd like to think I'm not a selfish guy. So, you know, there's just been a lot of stuff, unforeseen stuff, that have affected, you know, our presentation of the league. Now the stuff with the national anthem. I never thought that when I started this that we'd have to get involved with covering the anthem and trying to explain who or what is making a statement and what it might be about and should we cover it and should we not. You know, I would say those are the negatives. I really do this job because I love sports and, in particular, I love football, and I wish there wasn't so much of the periphery stuff that we have to cover, but we do.
So you call it a World Series when you were 30, but as you mentioned, Monday Night Football for the longest time has been really one of the premier properties in sports. Have you found it that you get recognized on the street more since taking this job than maybe you did before, even though you had been in the public eye for over two decades by that point?
Yes, much more. You know, I think it's a byproduct of, obviously, it's a much higher rated show. I mean, I did some terrific college football games, college basketball games, golf, a lot of stuff the last couple of decades at ESPN that did a very strong rating, but nothing compared to what Monday Night Football does. I mean, Monday Night Football wins Monday night in all of television almost every week, unless, you know, there's the aberration with the thing like the debate that I mentioned last year. So, and I knew it was going to happen, Ryan, because Mike Tirico is a really good friend of mine, and I've spent a lot of time around him over the years, and you know, even as recently as a year and a half or so ago, when he was still playing football, we were out to dinner in Arizona, and you know, everybody recognized Mike, and very few people recognized me. And quite frankly, I was fine with that, and I still wouldn't mind it. But you know, the only thing about the increased recognition, you know, obviously, I need to be aware of it, but also, you know, I welcome it because I've met a lot of nice people who come over and introduced themselves and said nice things and who I otherwise would not have met.
Let's pretend for a second that like all the rights are up for bidding now. So there's nothing, there's no bottleneck with which network has which rights. What's your bucket list of events to call that you haven't called before?
Well, there are very few of them because I've been blessed with the opportunities that I've had. I mean, I think I've done every BCS bowl game and probably most of the rest of the bowl games that exist. I've done all four major golf championships on national TV. I think there are very few people who can say they've done that because, you know, unless you've been at CBS, you haven't done the Masters. And I was at CBS, and obviously the ESPN had the chance to do the U.S. Open and the British Open, did the Masters at PGA. You know, did the U.S. Open tennis when I was at CBS. You know, Olympics, I've just been blessed. Major college basketball, the Final Four, the Women's Final Four, the Soccer National Championship, college hockey, college lacrosse national championships. I'm going to leave out a few things. So, you know, I feel like I've been really blessed. You know, I think the one big thing remaining, it's the ultimate sporting event in our country, obviously, is the Super Bowl. And I don't know if I'll get that chance or not. And right now, we're not in the Super Bowl rotation at ESPN and through Monday Night Football, but who knows? Maybe that might change down the road and that opportunity would come along. But if there was one thing left to do, that would certainly be it.
So, like I said before, you call it a World Series, but now on Monday Night Football, we're also in an era of like social media where really everything, everybody's performance in sports and broadcasting is dissected in the second. And so now you're on TV, but then people like, for example, this past Monday, Jason Whitlock tweeted, Sean McDonough is not the best option for Monday Night Football. Should be Brad Nessler in this spot. Mike Tirico has to be cackling and rolling a blunt listening to this broadcast. McDonough is bad. How do you feel when that type of like feedback crosses your radar?
Well, I wasn't aware of it until you just said it. You know, he's entitled to his opinion. It's the reason why I don't even have a Twitter app, because most of it is really negative. You know, what I care about is the people whose opinion I respect. You know, he can talk about Mike Tirico all he wants, and I agree with Mike. I don't think Mike is cackling. Remember, Mike sent a text message to the truck the other night during that same game, telling the producer and director we were with a long time that he thought the show looked and sounded terrific. So, you know, I worry about people who actually know something and whose opinion I respect. And the opinions that matter to me are the people who know what they're talking about. You know, Mike Tirico, a couple of years ago, speaking up at Syracuse University in a Q&A with the students, one kid said, I want to be a play-by-play broadcaster. What advice would you give me? And Mike's advice was listen to Sean McDonough. So I don't think he shares Jason's opinion. You know, maybe, you know, and I don't have much use for Jason, quite frankly. So if we're going there, so be it.
Speaking of social media, your dad, Will McDonough, legendary former like Boston Globe NFL reporter, and was also one of the first people to be giving sports information on television. How do you think that he would have been in this era where he's competing against the Adam Schefters of the world in Twitter rather than trying to necessarily break things in the newspaper?
Well, I don't know. I think he'd just kind of be sad basically about what has happened in his business and our business, you know, in the years that have transpired since he retired. You know, it's a pretty vicious world that we're living in. It's ultra competitive. You know, back then you were just trying to get scoops to be in a newspaper the next day. Now you're trying to get a scoop that people might know about in 2 seconds. So, you know, Adam and a lot of the other guys out there doing it do a great job. You know, I think my dad probably wouldn't have even wanted to participate in the world of the journalism the way it is right now. So it's probably a better thing that he came along when he came along. But, you know, I think Shefty and those guys have done a great job operating and one of the nice in the world that they're in, and one of the nice things that I've always preached about Adam is he's always gone out of his way whenever I've seen him to talk about my dad and what a great role model he was to him, and how to Adam, my dad, was kind of the standard of how it should be done.
When we were talking about this as a group of our site and Slack, one of my colleagues, Kyle Koster, said that you called one of the greatest moments of his life with the Michigan State, Michigan punt botch game in 2015. How often do you have people come up to you and just talk about how your calls have like resonated with them throughout the years attached to their favorite teams?
Well, it's funny because, you know, that Michigan State game, obviously whenever I run a Michigan State person, they associate me with a great moment in their school's history and in their fandom. And when I see Michigan people, you know, I just try to say, don't kill the messenger, because it wasn't my fault, you know. So I would have had the same emotional high-pitched response had the result gone the other way if it was, you know, Michigan that ran it in for a touchdown on the last play. So it's kind of funny. You know, you mentioned the World Series in 92, did the NLCS, Atlanta and Pittsburgh, one of the great game sevens in the history of baseball. And, you know, Pittsburgh lost, and, you know, Sid Bream scored the winning run for Atlanta in the bottom of the ninth. And maybe a couple weeks later, a month later, I spoke at the University of Pittsburgh, and an older gentleman came up to me and said, you know, you were a part of the worst moment of my life. And I said to him, well, that's the worst moment of your life. You've had a pretty great life. So at the end of the day, it's just a baseball game. But, you know, I've been watching these Michigan State promos all week, and they're playing this weekend as we speak, and, you know, that call is still living on, so I think I'll be hearing it for a while.
So do you think that, like, you've had some, like, really great games, like that game, the six overtime UConn-Syracuse game, the, like, Richard Hamilton buzzer beater, as we talked about, the Joe Carter home run. Do you think it's like almost like Vern Lundquist, where sometimes these things just follow you, or is it that you've just got, you guys have done such high volume of games that it's bound to happen once every like 6 or 8 months?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I don't know that they're following us, but I do think Vern and I have both been very lucky that we've happened to be in the right place at the right time when those things have happened, and, you know, some other things that have happened. You know, I did the College World Series one year when Warren Morris hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth for LSU to win the World Series, College World Series. He hadn't hit a home run the whole year. And, you know, I know in LSU athletic lore, you know, they still celebrate that play now, 20, I guess it's 20 plus years later. So I think some of it's just really good fortune, and I think the other part of it, as you said, Ryan, is just you know, when you're around long enough, when you do that volume of games, I guess sooner or later the odds are in your favor that you're going to wind up in a place where something pretty special happens.
Going back to the general NFL landscape, what do you see playing out this season? Like, if you had to put money on who wins the Super Bowl, who do you think would be your favorite right now?
Oh, gosh. You know, obviously the prohibitive favorite for just about everybody was New England at the start of the year. But as we're talking, it's hard to wager on a team that's giving up 32 points per game. You know, you have to think with the coaching that they have, a lot of the same people that they have back playing, that they'll get it fixed. But right now it's, you know, it's a real struggle on defense, particularly in the back end. So, you know, I still think until somebody knocks them off, though, I mean, if you told me pick one team, I'd probably pick them. You know, I think although after what I've seen from Kansas City, I'm a believer in Kansas City. So, you know, I'd say a slight edge to Kansas City, but I wouldn't bury the Patriots yet.
What about in the NFC? Who do you see coming out of there?
Wow. You know, I think that's a total toss-up, too. Certainly four games through, there have been a lot of surprises. I don't think Dallas has been as good as people thought. You know, obviously, there have been a couple teams like the Rams who have been a lot better than everybody thought. You know, I guess if forced to choose right now at this point in the season, I'll go with Green Bay.
At this point in your life, having been like calling these games really since like the 80s now, is there any team left other than maybe like Syracuse that you're a fan of?
Oh, yeah. You know, obviously my brother's the general manager of the Phoenix Suns. My other brother, Terry, is vice president of the Arizona Cardinals. So, and we live in Arizona for half the year. So, definitely followed with serious interest the fortunes of the Suns and the Cardinals. And then, you know, I still follow the Boston teams. I mean, growing up in Boston, having done the Red Sox games for all those years, 17 years on local TV, certainly follow them with interest. I think as you get older, the fan party goes out. I mean, when I was little, I was a huge fan. I mean, if the Red Sox lost a big game, you know, I was almost fighting back tears, or if the Patriots did or the Celtics did. You know, I think as you get older, that part of you goes away a little bit, and it's more about the relationships that you have. You know, John Harbaugh is a really good friend, so, you know, I hope that the Ravens do well. You know, a lot of college coaches I've become friendly with from all these years of doing college basketball, but, you know, those would be the teams probably that I follow with some interest. But, you know, as life goes on, I think I'm less and less of a fan, not that I don't follow it with interest, but I think the passion with which I followed teams as a kid is not really there anymore.
Whether it's for preparing for games or just generally staying abreast of sports, who are some of your favorite people or publications to read for sports coverage?
Today or just over the years?
We can do both.
Yeah, well, you know, we're lucky. In terms of preparing for Monday Night Football, we have a researcher, Jim Power, who, as a matter of fact, Mike Tirico said to me, you're going to be blown away how helpful Jim Carr is in preparation. And he was a little bit, he had some trepidation about going somewhere else and doing a football game without having the benefit of Jim's preparation assistance. You know, Mike is as well prepared as anybody, as you know, from watching him. So Jim is a huge help. The teams are a huge help. You know, there's so many resources, you know, NFL.com, you know, the Game Pass. I watch the videos of the teams that we have, the previous games that they've played, the teams provide us information. As I said, I don't do Twitter. I don't even have it. So I'm not one of those people who's on Twitter to follow news sources, because I think that stuff is available elsewhere as well. But, you know, I'm at ESPN.com all the time, particularly with our NFL coverage, and following, you know, going to other websites that cover the NFL very well. But, you know, it's a wide variety of resources that I use.
Growing up, who were some of your favorite people to read?
My dad. You know, that's a pretty simple. You know, I think all the guys in the Boston Globe back then, you know, Peter Gammons, Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, you know, you go on and on. I'm Lee Montville, Ray Fitzgerald, you know, man, legendary writers. Yeah, I've always enjoyed John Feinstein's work. You know, I was a big fan of Rick Riley when he was on the back page of Sports Illustrated. And, he became a friend. He became a friend when he got to ESPN, and, you know, I've always appreciated his talent. So, you know, Bill Simmons. Bill and I used to do a radio show together in Boston, and I'm an admirer of his talent. You know, there's so many people that I could name from the past, who some of whom are still working in the present, but been fortunate to be around it my whole life.
I know you've got a heart out. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you think is really interesting that you want to talk about right now?
No. I mean, I think you've covered a lot of it, and it's actually perfect timing because I'm just pulling into the place where this charity golf tournament is. So timing is actually impeccable.
All right. Thanks so much, Sean. Good luck the rest of the season. We appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks, Ryan. My pleasure.
All right. Bye.
Familiar touch turns strange.